Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan, South Sudan, and the rest of Africa this Thursday, January 30th, 2025. Relatives of passengers killed in South Sudan's plane crash have begun collecting the remains of their loved ones. And the World Food Program says they are facing challenges delivering much-needed support to families trapped inside Sudan. We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Relatives of the 20 people killed in a plane crash Wednesday at an oil field airstrip in South Sudan's Unity State are mourning their loved ones across South Sudan. Some of the next kin say they have been prevented from by authorities in South Sudan from collecting the remains of their loved ones. Our reporter Dennis Logonyi is live on this line from the capital, Juba. Dennis, bring us up to speed on what is happening in South Sudan as far as the plane crash that occurred on Wednesday. What is the latest?
Yeah, well, Tanza, as you know, since yesterday, the bodies were brought to Juba Funeral Home here in Juba. Families have been moving since morning to the funeral home so that they can be able to pick the bodies of their loved ones. The situation has been a somber mood for most of the families who have come across. You could see tears from most of the people who had come to collect the bodies. But however, they did not start taking the bodies early in the morning because I think some of the other things were not completed. So they had to wait, and they, at around 2 there, then they started to give out some of the bodies to the loved ones.
And I know that the identification process could be tedious given the nature of the plane crash. But what are the... Is there any statement from the government on this tragic situation?
Well, we have seen the condolence messages that have been issued by different institutions, including the NILPET and the Ministry of Petroleum, including the presidency. All they are talking about is investigations. I was able to get in touch and also talk to the Indian community that had come to pick one of their loved ones. And what they explained to me, they told me the process has been so slow in doing things. For example, the investigation and all this, it has been so slow in terms of trying to get to finish the work earlier, given the number that they had.
From 2017 to date, this is the seventh tragic plane accident in South Sudan. And every time there's an accident, the government comes out strong, promising investigation. Are there any, if you like, past results of investigation made public to explain how the plane, why the plane crashed, and what will happen to the families? I mean, in other countries, the insurance company of the plane pays the families who lost their loved ones. Is that the case in South Sudan?
For the case of South Sudan, it's difficult to tell like that because several of these plane crashes, we have not seen a serious report that has been given as far as investigations are concerned, including others are still moving to court to ensure that there is compensation for their loved ones. But it seems it's not coming forward, though we see NILPET was emphasizing that they ensure that there is a thorough investigation in 2 days. However, for now, we can say that there will be results that will come out so fast. But if you could see in the, for example, on social media, people talking about this incident, people are not really convinced in regards to investigations, in regards to cases of plane crash in South Sudan.
Dennis, I have to share this with you. I've had some discussions with a friend who is a pilot and working in South Sudan, and he told me their biggest challenge is the owners of the plane or the owners of the company who refuse to listen to, you know, when pilots say the plane needs to go for service, the owners say the plane should go for a trip. Have you ever spoken to aviation authorities to understand what is going on within the local domestic airline industry in South Sudan?
Well, Tanzania, to be very honest in regards to this, once I followed up a case on the same plane crash, I tried to reach out to authorities. But then it seemed there is a lack of coordination among the owners of the plane and then also the authorities. It seems the owners of the plane do have a kind of power which is more than the authorities. And I think this is when the authorities have really to come out and really ground most of these planes that do move in the different parts of the country. Though sometimes, of course, people would say they will go with the plane somewhere, but then the plane might come back when it's overloaded, you know. So these are the cases that are here, and they always happen, and they are usual. So I think it's the high time that the authorities put into practice that they don't really exceed the number of people and luggage that they carry along on the planes.
When I spoke yesterday with the Minister of Information in Unity State, he was too quick to say that he believes the mechanical problems is to blame for the plane crash, even before the black box is examined. What are the authorities in Juba telling you about the cause of that plane crash?
Well, yesterday I talked to the aviation authority, and all they told me was they are sending a team to go to do the investigation, also to know what really happened. But I think what the minister came up with, it was very quick, because this moment is very hard to say, and this is the reason without even seeing. So we are still waiting as well to know from authorities what exactly is the reason behind this accident.
And talk to me about the training of pilots. I mean, is there any piloting school in South Sudan where they are training, you know, cadres for the air industry? If not, where do they get their pilots from?
What I know is they have an association as a pilot association of South Sudan, but then the two pilots that were aboard, I think they are all Ugandans, and I happen also to have a chat this evening while they are waiting for the bodies of their loved ones. One will be buried in the ancestral home of Adjumani district of Uganda, and then the other one will be taken to Lira district. However, they told me all the costs has been paid for by the light air services where they have been flying. So that's all I could get from this side.
And final question here. Any word from GPOC, the oil consortium that chartered the plane that crashed? I know that it's not easy to get any information from the oil companies because they are tight-lipped. Have they spoken about this tragic incident?
So far, we have not seen any statement that is coming from GPOC as as a company, but then when you reach at the funeral home, you could see some people wearing you know, uniforms and also having tags that indicate that they are from GPOC. So I'm just thinking they are around, but they haven't issued any statement yet that is public. And we are as well still waiting as media here in South Sudan.
And what about the ministry? What about the Ministry of Petroleum? What about the Ministry of Petroleum? It's my understanding that most of the 20 passengers who were killed in the plane crash are oil workers. What is the Ministry of Petroleum saying?
Well, the Ministry of Petroleum as well, they sent in their condolences and also promised investigations into this matter. They say this incident that happened is not only loss to the communities, the loved ones, but as well a very big loss to the oil industry in South Sudan, given the resource of these people who cannot be, be brought back because they have been helping a lot in the country. So it is a big loss to the country as well.
It is indeed a big loss to the country, and I've been trying since morning to speak with relevant authorities on this matter. And I must tell you, I have been dodged from one ministry to another. Is there a reason why South Sudanese officials are tight-lipped when events like this happen?
To me, I think most of the officials do not want to be be taken out of maybe a context, or they think it's not the right time to speak. Equally, the same to us here. We could reach out to several of these officials, but they are available to talk to you off record, but then they are not there to speak to you on record. So this is a challenge, and I think it's a cross-cutting.
And how do you overcome that situation where people who are appointed to be in the office and charged with the responsibility to give information are deliberately refusing to speak? How do you handle that situation?
It's really indeed a sad situation that I think some of these officials have to be enlightened and told what's their role as far as passing information to the public is concerned. One thing that I realize is I think most of these officials think when they talk to the media, they could lose their jobs. So these are some of the small things that most of these officials fear for. However, as journalists in the country, we are doing our best. We are trying to reach out to the people. And then also those who are on the grassroots to make sure that at least we are able to inform, because this is one of the role that we have taken up, and we promise to always deliver on this job.
Thank you very much, Denis Logonyi, for bringing us up to speed on the situation in South Sudan. That's Denis Logonyi, VOA reporter in Juba, speaking to me about the fate of those who died in a plane crash on Wednesday. Here in the United States, dozens of people were feared dead Thursday after a passenger jet and a U.S. military helicopter collided at Ronald Reagan National Airport near Washington. Emergency crews, including boats and divers, worked throughout the night in the murky frozen water of the Potomac River adjacent to the airport where the wreckage fell. Officials say three U.S. Army soldiers were on the helicopter, which was conducting a training flight. American Airlines, which operated the flight from Kansas to Washington, said there were six passengers and four crew members on the plane. The United Nations World Food Programme says its effort to deliver food to families trapped in Sudan is hindered by intensified fighting and an arbitrary obstruction of humanitarian convoys. The UN Food Agency says it has managed to deliver relief items into hard-to-reach areas, including Zamzam Camp in North Darfur, South Khartoum, and Gabesh in West Kordofan. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a small Chinese company sent shockwaves around the tech world this week. Find out how after the break. A small Chinese company sent shockwaves around the tech world this week with news that it has created a high-performing artificial intelligence system with less computing power and at a lower cost than the ones made by U.S. tech giants. Michelle Quinin reports.
Up to this point, U.S. technology giants have led the global race to build the most advanced artificial intelligence systems. They rely on giant data centers and cutting-edge microchips. And they say they need more money to pay for more energy and more powerful chips. Now comes DeepSeek. The Chinese upstart has created an AI system that matches the performance of ones made in the United States. But DeepSeek says, compared to its American peers, it spent far less money and used less computing power to manufacture its system. The news hit like a bomb across Silicon Valley. DeepSeek's app shot to number one in the Apple App Store. Stock prices of U.S. tech firms dropped. And Washington, which sees the U.S. in a fierce artificial intelligence race with China, took note.
The release of DeepSeek AI from a Chinese company should be a wake-up call for our industries that we need to be laser-focused on competing to win.
The U.S. has instituted stiff export controls to stop the highest-level chips from making it into China. DeepSeek claims that working within constraints helped it come up with cheaper workarounds, says Olaf Groth at the University of California, Berkeley, Haas School of Business. He spoke to VOA over Zoom.
It is low-cost, frugal innovation that is much faster and much less expensive to use, to both create and use, right? So as such, it will have appeal to a very broad swath.
DeepSeek's breakthrough sent a shudder in Silicon Valley in another respect. It relies on open-source technology, which is shared and built upon by coders across firms and countries. That's a different approach from most AI giants, such as OpenAI, Microsoft, and Google, which keep their work under wraps. But 2 years ago, Meta, the parent of Facebook, released the code for Llama, its cutting-edge AI technology, so that others could use it to innovate. DeepSeek used Llama to teach its AI models and then released its technology to the open source community. Olaf Groth.
The open source community feels very strongly that open source is a very necessary way to go because it democratizes, as it were, the both creation and use of artificial intelligence at lower cost.
Some observers say the advent of DeepSeek calls into question the effectiveness of the United States' recent AI policy. President Donald Trump has said he will make AI a priority. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
The African Union has called for immediate halt to fighting in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo and urged dialogue to resolve the escalating conflict. On Wednesday, the U.S. Embassy in Congo advised Americans not to travel to the country. For VOA News, Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Calm returned to Kinshasa on Wednesday, a day after protests over M23's capture of Goma in eastern Congo. Angry youth set fire to the embassies of Belgium, France, Kenya, Uganda, and Rwanda. The protesters accused those countries of supporting Rwanda, which Kinshasa accuses of backing the M23 rebels. Kigali denies the charge. The embassies either condemned or expressed deep concern over the attacks. Chacha Nyaigoti Chacha, a Kenyan expert in international relations and diplomacy, says he does not think the protests will affect the DRC's relation with the affected countries.
I don't think it will affect the relationship at the level of policy and the decision makers. Because right now, they should deal with that as an act of criminals. And those who were responsible for vandalizing and burning down the property of the other nations should be pursued through the legal means and the way the national laws are implemented.
According to some residents who spoke to VOA, Goma is calm after 2 days of heavy fighting. Residents who ventured out Wednesday saw bodies on the streets, some in military uniforms and others in civilian clothes. The U.S. government announced Tuesday it has closed its embassy in Kinshasa to the public and called on its citizens to review their safety and travel plans. African Union and other regional bodies have called for a cessation of hostilities and for the M23 rebel group to withdraw from the city, a move security experts say will be difficult for the rebel group to accept. This African Community regional bloc has called for the summit to discuss the conflict and address the tension between DR Congo and Rwanda. According to the Congolese state media, President Felix Tshisekedi will not attend the talks. Crispin Mvano is a Congolese political and security researcher in Goma. He says Kinshasa will also need to address and solve its internal problems. The conflict in DR Congo isn't just about disputes with other countries. It also stems from internal divisions among the Congolese people. Even as the talks continue in Nairobi, lasting stability depends on resolving these internal issues. If Congolese leaders and communities don't engage in dialogue and address their differences in Kinshasa, the peace talks alone are unlikely to bring real stability, Vano says. DR Congo is home to over 100 armed groups, many fighting for control of resources and mining areas. In the latest conflict, the Congolese army and the allied Wazalendo militia retreated from the city, with some soldiers surrendering at the UN peacekeeping base in Goma. Great Lakes region security analyst Desmond Nkunda says Kinshasa needs to build a strong army to confront rebels like the M23.
M23, they are very well equipped. And how does that impact on the kind of victories that they are attaining in DRC? So the point is, if the DRC government does not save up its and up its game, then it's going to be very difficult for them to be able to maintain a semblance of peace when they have a well-armed and well-supported armed group like M23.
Congolese Foreign Minister Therese Kayikwama Wagner said in an emergency meeting of the United Nations Security Council on Tuesday that more than 500,000 people in eastern Congo were displaced this month and that the humanitarian situation there is getting worse. Mohamed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
Diplomatic tensions are rising in African capitals as efforts to end fighting in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo continue. The East African Community, the South African Development Community, the United Nations, France, and the United States have all called for ceasefire. However, the M23 rebels who captured the eastern DRC city of Goma say they are moving on to other areas, including towards the capital, Kinshasa. Yesterday, DRC President Felix Tshisekedi condemned what he called inaction of the international community in the face of intensifying conflict in the east, warning of the risk of regional escalation of the conflict. He said his forces are mounting a strong response to the M23 advance, and he again accused Rwanda of backing the M23 and sending its troops into DRC.
Votre silence et votre inaction face à la barbarie du régime de Kigali,
the silence and inaction of the in the face of the Kigali government's brutality and atrocities by its henchmen are not only affront to the people of the Democratic Republic of Congo, but also to the universal values of justice and peace. Rwanda has never directly said it backed M23, despite reports it does from the DRC, South Africa, the United Nations, and the rights groups. Kigali officials in turn say DRC backs the Democratic Forces of the Liberation of Rwanda, or FDLR, which aims to overthrow Rwanda's government. President Paul Kagame says the DRC is responsible for the conflict because it has refused to negotiate with M23. Yesterday, during a virtual summit of East African leaders, Kagame accused South Africa of distorting his conversation with South African President Cyril Ramaphosa, who called for an halt to the fighting.
He's also there pretending to be playing a peacemaker role, and he has a force that has been fighting alongside FDLR and has been fighting the M23 on the instructions of Tshisekedi, because these are people who are not supposed to be in Congo, that these are from Rwanda, or the M23 are not Rwandans, please.
Kagame denies M23 was responsible, saying Ramaphosa informed him the troops were killed by DRC forces. That's all we prepared for you this Thursday, January 30th, 2024. We now leave you with Ras Corby and the song Face Sabbath. We have been listening to Ras Corby and the song Face Sabbath. Ras Corby's band is called Podu. Podu in Bongo means fire. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. And today is Thursday, January 30th, 2025. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Kwang, we wish you a lovely evening. Join us again for another edition from the South Sudan in Focus.
Saba, Saba, Saba. Free Saba, 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 Saba. Free Saba, 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 Saba.